You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at TicketKing.com. Again, that's TicketKing.com.
Sure, I could come up with some flashy lead that shows you how clever and witty I truly am. But for this one, I'd rather just speak from the heart. Up yours, Tom Brady! And with that, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Lemps Talk and Pack. I'm your host, Chris Lempesis, coming to you once again from my basement Packer room. In my home in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, here to break down Green Bay's. Should it have been that close? Nope. Is it still satisfying anyways? Hell yeah! 14-12 road win over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday at Raymond James Stadium. A game played before the nation as it was Fox's America's Game of the Week. A game also played in some extreme heat, as temps hovered around the high 80s and low 90s all afternoon in Tampa. Definitely a factor. At one point in the first half, they showed Aaron Jones. He was like dousing his face with water. He was squirting his face. Alan Lazard, of course, you probably saw barfed after catching his second quarter touchdown. Look, I know these guys don't live in Green Bay year-round, but let's be honest. These Packers, they're basically Midwesterners now. They spend enough time in Green Bay that I think you can give them that distinction. And we all know how us hardy Midwesterners handle the heat. Not well. It's not our fault. Look, if you don't live in the Midwest, our blood basically spends, I don't know, what, 6, 7, 8 months of the year thickening to the texture of ragu. So, man, we face even a little heat. And Sunday was definitely more than a little heat. But, I mean, even a little bit, and we all turn into Chris Middleton, you know, just pouring sweat. So to get a win in that heat, where the Packers and Aaron Rodgers in particular have struggled in recent years, oh yeah, baby, you will take that. And with that win, Green Bay improves to 2-1 on the season, good enough for a three-way tie for first in the NFC North with the Minnesota Vikings and Chicago Bears, both of whom won Sunday. The Vikings pulled out a last-minute 28-24 win over the Detroit Lions in Minneapolis, and the Bears also won in the last minute, actually the last play of the game, using a 30-yard Cairo Santos field goal to down the Houston Texans 23-20 in Chicago. And with that extremely Lionsy loss, very, very Lionsy, Detroit drops to 1-2 on the year. Now, quick thing about Lions fans. As I've mentioned on the show before, I grew up in Michigan. I grew up in the Upper Peninsula, right? I'm a Youper. Spent most of the, well, I spent what, the first 23 years of my life there? And then another year after college. I know Lions fans. And there was funny of seeing people on Twitter after the game, like, oh, after that Vikings game got over, like, oh, I don't know how Lions fans do this. It's like, look, let me just tell you guys something. If you think that loss hurt Lions fans in any way, it did not. Most Lions fans are totally numb to this shit. They're just totally dead to this stuff. It doesn't make any difference. Once you become the first team in NFL history to go 0-16, like, there's nothing those Lions fans can't handle. This is nothing for them. This is a walk in the park for Lions fans. Come on now. I promise you, they're not really that affected by it. All right, so before we get into the fun, God, I hope you're having fun already. I have to do the shameless self-promotion, which I know you love or at the very least tolerate. Twitter, Lemps, MKE, at It's Just Chris Now. Facebook, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts. The email, Old Bag of Donuts, OL Bag of Donuts at gmail.com. For anyone listening on the wonderful Packers Talk iTunes page, leave a rating, 5 stars. Me like you those the most. 4 stars are good, too. A comment. Again, no one's left a freaking comment in weeks. But if you wanted to, that would be great, especially if it was positive. You can find us on Spotify by searching for Packers Talk and looking for our logo, which is the head of the Vince Lombardi statue that sits outside Lambeau Field. Also, I want to tell people, I haven't mentioned this, if you're listening on Spotify, could you leave a Spotify rating? If you're listening on your phone right and you're subscribing, which you should be, right near the top, there's a little star section. If you could rate us there, that would be awesome. We'd really appreciate that. Obviously, again, 5 stars, me like you those the most. We're on the iHeartRadio app. You can find us there as well. And if you listen on a platform that I don't mention, as I always say, please drop me a line and let me know. I'd love to hear it. And just subscribe. You know, I'm just going to continue to tell you guys that, to impart that wisdom onto you. Just subscribe. Mash down mindlessly on that subscribe button. Then we deliver the shit right to your phone. It's there when you wake up Monday morning. I'm right there. And I'm not going to tell anybody what's on your phone. None of the Packers Talk podcast, we're not going to say what's on your phone. Our lips, zoop, sealed. And I have to give a special shout-out to our wonderful sponsor, Ticket King. For all your Packers ticket needs, head to theticketking.com. Once again, the website is theticketking.com. Ticket King's still not following me on Twitter. I don't know. I don't know what I got to do. I drive right by their office in Milwaukee. It's right on Broadway. Maybe I should stop in and talk to those guys. Do they want me to stop in and beg? Because I will. No, I won't. I won't. Get a hold of yourself, Chris. You're not going to beg. But if they were to follow me, that would be nice. I don't want to have to stop in and beg. That's all I'm saying. Okay. Now that we done got all that out the way, let's go. Let's dive right in. Let's talk about this Packers dub. A take this one and shove it right up your tailpipe, Tom Brady dub. Which, oh my God, how extremely satisfying of a dub is that, huh? Whew, so good. Even if you did need a gallon of Pepto-Bismol and an oxygen tank to make it through this one. It's Brady. It's Tom Brady. He's maybe the best quarterback to ever play. Or he's up there anyways. You beat him, shit, that's awesome. And that's where I'm going to begin tonight. With the group that held Tom Brady and company in check for, well, essentially 57 out of 60 minutes Sunday. And that's the Packers defense. Oh yeah, baby. Your old pal Lemps is throwing you a 12-6 curve right off the bat here. Usually, as you probably know, I talk about the offense first. That's almost always the most logical starting point when discussing any Packers game. But tonight, it's the defense. Okay, disclaimer. Yes, I know. The Bucs were without receivers Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Julio Jones. I know this. But that was still a whale of an effort for this from this Packers defense, hey? Man, really a strong performance, I thought, for the most part, again. There's some not-so-fun stuff that we'll get to in a little bit. Thought the run defense was pretty strong, coming off a rather weak showing against the Bears last week. Because really, I don't know about you, but that was my big fear coming into this game, you know. Brady's going to be down multiple wideouts, but he still has Leonard Fournette back there. Fournette's a really good running back, you know. I thought, oh, they're going to hammer him over and over against this run defense, which is suddenly maybe a little suspect now, and geez, how are they going to hold up, you know? Well, they did quite well overall. Fournette finishing with just 35 yards on 12 carries. That's a 2.9 yards per attempt. That's excellent. His long run of the day, 6 yards. You'll love to see that. Now, they didn't run Fournette as much as I thought they were going to, especially when you consider how close the game was. But still, nice work from the run D. The tackling was much better than it was last week. There weren't as many big gaping holes for Fournette like there were for Montgomery last week against Chicago. Good stuff. And when we talk about tackling, oh my God, how excited am I to do this? We've got to start by talking about my guy, Sky Umah, University of Minnesota, my fellow Gopher inside linebacker, Devondre Campbell. What an absolute GD beast Devondre was in this one, finishing with 14 total tackles. One tackle for loss, one pass defended. Of course, we know when that came, don't we? You know, and as usual, we'll get to that. As usual with Campbell, you kind of noticed him all over the field. You did, right? There were a few good moments from him in this one, outside of the obvious. Really nice stop by Campbell, I thought, on a screen to Fournette. That set up a third down early in the game. And there he is. He's tackling Cole Beasley on a third down completion, not allowing Beasley to get the first down. That forced the Tampa Bay punt. Now we get to his capstone moment, the two-point conversion. It's, you know, it wasn't just that he made the play. That came, of course, after Tampa got the delay of game, which backed them up 5 yards. So instead of being at the two, they're now running the two-point play from the seven. It wasn't just that he made that play, as great as that was. It was that he knew they were going to make, he knew what was coming. He said as much after the game. He said they knew when Tampa Bay came out in that formation with the wide receiver lined up behind the tight end. He knew they knew what was coming. So he trusted his excellent instincts, got to his spot, and then made the play. So it's the whole package. It's diagnosing it beforehand, getting there, making the play. He showed why he's an elite player in that one moment, you know? Just great stuff from Devondre in this one. God, what a beast. What a weekend to be a Gopher, if I may just take a side street for a minute. You know, we beat Michigan State yesterday. We blew them out in East Lansing, getting us into the top 25 or 21 in the AP poll, 23 in the coaches poll, cracked the top 25. That was great. And then Devondre closes the weekend out for us with this excellent performance. Just what a weekend to be a Gopher. Everything's coming up Minnesota right now. Love it. You're coming up Minnesota Gophers, I should say. But Campbell was not the only standout performance on the defense in this one. No. Of course not. Kenny Clark, two more sacks. Just dominating inside once again against both the run and the pass. You know, he had a nice third down run stop on Fournette on Tampa's first drive of the game. The first for either team. Great stuff from Kenny. Jerron Reed continues to play solid football. Really, one of those Kenny sacks, his second sack actually, that was basically Reed's. He did most of the work pressuring Brady, who kind of was able to get away but barely stayed on his feet. Then Kenny kind of just pushed him down, really. I'd almost give Reed a half sack there, but that's just me. And then he recovered the fumble caused by Keyshawn Nixon in the third quarter. More on him in a minute. But Reed is proving to be what I thought he could be, which has been a valuable piece on the defensive line that most importantly takes pressure off Kenny, but also can make plays of his own. You saw the value he brings to the team in this one. Great. Moving on to the next level of the defense, how about Campbell's running mate at inside linebacker, rookie Quay Walker, with the huge, huge forced fumble in the second quarter that came at a moment when Green Bay really needed the defense to swing the momentum back. Following the Aaron Jones fumble. Don't worry, that's coming. They needed that momentum swinging play. Walker came up with that, right? Pass to Breshad Perriman, complete. Walker comes in, punches that ball loose. Darnell Savage recovers. Walker just continues to flash every week. He's made mistakes, yes. He's had plays where he's been out of position, yes. You expect that with a rookie. But he's flashing these moments every week where you can see the potential, the raw potential he has. You can see a really special player there. I mean, remember, like I said, he doesn't even know what the fuck he's doing right now. You know, this is his third pro game. He's basically flying blind out there, right? I don't even care that he played at Georgia and played in all those big games. Three games into the pros, you're flying blind, man. Just wait till he figures out what he's doing. Again, I'm just going to keep saying it. This is a special talent they have. This kid, if he stays healthy, I mean, the sky's the limit for Quay Walker. No question. Someone who does know what he's doing, very much so. That would be outside linebacker Rashawn Gary. Another sack for Gary. That's 3 in 3 weeks. And he showed why he's such a stud on that sack, hey? Oh, my God. He beat both a tight end chip and the left tackle to get to Brady. Two guys. He got through two guys. That's a special talent. Olsen on the broadcast, I think, put him up there with guys like T.J. Watt and Myles Garrett. And I was glad to hear that because I definitely think he's on that level. He may not have the name recognition yet, but that's coming. But as far as talent, he's on that level, no question. But not even outside of that, right? He draws the big holding call on the Tampa Bay left tackle that wiped out that third down conversion when Brady took off and ran and sprinted all the way out near midfield on the QB scramble. But Gary drew the holding call. That wiped that out. That's not going to show up on any stat sheet, but that was a huge play. right? He made plays against the run, too. Again, I don't know why I didn't bet him plus 7,000. I guarantee it's not plus 7,000 now to win Defensive Player of the Year. Idiot. And I think you see kind of, when you look at guys like Gary and Clark and Campbell, those guys were why we were so excited about this Packers defense, because they're multidimensional playmakers. They're not just guys who can, you know, they're guys who make plays against both the run and the pass, and they can make plays in coverage. You know, it's exciting. Jair Alexander's one of those guys. And when he went out in the first quarter with a groin injury. Quick on that, I love that they listed him as questionable to return. When have the Packers ever had a guy questionable to return that actually returned? You could probably count on one hand and have fingers left over how many times that's happened. Certainly on two hands and have fingers left over. When they say a guy, they should just say he's out. We know how conservative the medical staff is, which is not a bad thing. It's just funny to me that they're like, so-and-so is questionable. They never come back. No. Or almost never. Get well soon, Ja, of course. So when he goes out with the injury, you're definitely concerned. Enter Nixon. Who, oh my God. Nixon was all over the place, wasn't he? Especially in that third quarter. Oh my God. He had a third quarter for the books, man. That was one for the books today, didn't he? Oh my God. The aforementioned forced fumble. That was huge. Later on in the third, he had really nice coverage on an end zone shot to Perriman. And then, in between those two plays, again, all of this happened in the third. There's Nixon on special teams, busting ass to get down the field to catch the punt at the one-yard line. Really, that was great. He really, in a lot of ways, kind of saved the day today. So, you know, hat tip to Kayshon Nixon for sure. All those performances, Rasul Douglas was good again in this one. Want to mention him also. It's a shame that all those performances were almost wasted by the uber-conservative play calling from defensive coordinator Joe Barry on that final Tampa Bay drive. I don't know what was going on there. Way too much cushion. They were playing way too soft, way too far back, and Brady took advantage. I was pulling my hair out. You probably were too, because you knew that was going to happen. I knew two plays in, seeing where they were lined up. I'm like, Brady's, because Brady's, I mean, kind of known to be a dinker and dunker anyways, especially at this point in his career. Like, I'm like, they're playing so far off, Brady's just going to take what they give him. He's just going to pick up, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 yards a clip. And that's exactly what they did. You know, I tweeted, I go, before you know it, they're going to be at the 10-yard line. Son of a bitch, that's exactly what happened. You know, I was like, get up on Brady. You know, he doesn't really, you know, they were far down on the depth chart at receiver, right? They had Cole Beasley out there. They just signed him last week. Brady's not really taking that many downfield shots at this point in his career anyways. I'm like, you got to get your guys up. Challenge them. Challenge these receivers at the line. Make Brady make a play. Barry made it far too easy for him on that final drive. And, you know, I mean, it led to the touchdown. Shit, that almost cost him the game. Just, I didn't like anything about it. It was a shame that that play calling almost wiped out 57 minutes of great defense that preceded it. Yeah. Thank God Campbell made that monster play, you know? That's all I can say. But in the end, they did close, right? That's the most important thing. And you know your boy Lamps? I'm going to keep these curveballs coming, because guess where I'm going next? The special teams. Oh yeah, that's it! I'm talking about the special teams, baby. I'm going to talk about them. I don't know. This has to be the first time I've talked about them this early on in the show for positive reasons. I know I've done it early in the show for negative reasons. Exclusively negative reasons, you might even say. This is the first time I've ever talked about them this early for positive reasons. But the special team, I was really impressed with the special teams, weren't you? They were good. Not like grading on a curve good, either. Good. The coverage units, oh my God. You know, I mean, Pat O'Donnell punted 7 times. Tampa only ended up returning 3 of those. That's because the coverage units were outstanding, particularly Rudy Ford. I feel like I mention him almost every week. What a signing that was late in camp after he got released by Jacksonville. Thank you, Jacksonville. Thank you for releasing Rudy Ford so we could pick him up. He has been outstanding. He's getting down there. He's right in these guys' faces when they catch the ball. He's not even allowing them an opportunity to return because they don't want to get popped. Outstanding. Outstanding stuff from the coverage units. Even the ones they did return, the three punts that Tampa did return. The long was a mere 16 yards. You'll take that every week. Speaking of O'Donnell, man, he booted the hell out of the ball, didn't he? Oh, my goodness. Seven punts, 48.4 yards average, five punts inside the 20, and a long of 63. Felt like the hang time was pretty good, too. You know, I was going back through my notes before I started kind of writing my outline or whatever. I couldn't believe all the instances I'd written. I typed out, nice punt, another nice punt, another nice punt. I think a lot of us were skeptical of that move because we really kind of fell in love with, you know, Borquez last year, the Boho bombs. O'Donnell so far has been excellent. He's exceeded what I thought he would be as a punter. That's great. You know, he and the coverage units, they consistently tilted the field in Green Bay's favor all day. They won that field position battle all damn day. That's outstanding. When's the last time you could even say that? I don't even know. You know? And then the return units, Amari Rodgers looks, I feel like he's kind of starting to figure it out. He had the one really nice return that got wiped out by the running into the kicker call. Now, I want to talk about that because that pissed me off. That call, that running into the kicker call on Tippa Nalii was bullshit. That was a terrible call. You could see on the replay, even the Fox guys were like, oh my God, he got shoved into the punter. Right? That was a terrible call. That wiped out a big return, you know? And then that ended up, that call ended up costing Green Bay about 35 yards in field position. Because then Tampa gets the kick again. He had a decent return on the next kick, but the block in the back wiped that out. So yeah, they lost about 35 yards of field position on that terrible call. That should have, so I've said this before. I think I've said this before on the show. I know I've said this on Twitter. I am in complete agreement with Bill Belichick, who said once upon a time, I can't remember who said this, sometime in the last few years, everything should be available to be challenged. Everything. Belichick said this, again, I don't remember when it was exactly, but everything, you know? He said holding calls, pass interferences. It wouldn't like extend the game or anything because you'd still have the same amount of challenges, but everything should be up to be challenged. The Packers should have been able to challenge that call because if they had, right, they would have not called that running into the kicker. The big return would have stood. They had great field position. Maybe they score on it. Now, maybe not with how the offense played, but maybe they would have. That was a terrible call. And again, yeah, I just think everything should be available to be challenged. Everything. 100%. Rich Bisaccia, he's already making a big difference, you know? You think about years past, right? If this game was played a year ago or 2 years ago, maybe they give up a big return. Maybe they give up a couple of them, right? Or maybe the punting isn't as good. And that tilts the game. And maybe the Packers lose. Now, special teams can make a big difference in games like this. We've just only seen it from the perspective of special teams making a big difference in a negative way. But today, I thought they made a big difference in a positive way. They played a big part in Green Bay winning this game. Do they win this game with the special teams coaches and units of years past? I don't know. I'm tempted to say they don't. The improvements they made, I mean, I didn't think it would happen this fast. I said in the season preview, I thought the special teams would get better slowly as we went along. It's moving way quicker than I ever expected, than I think anybody expected. This is becoming a good unit. Not just like, don't screw, but like good. Yeah. Can Rich sprinkle some of his magic dust on the offense? I kid. But I mean, it was certainly a tale of two offenses Sunday, wasn't it? Ugh. So he had the good Packers offense. I mean, those first two drives, they were hot enough to turn goat piss into gasoline. Copyright Blues Brothers. Not so much the run game. That was tough sledding most of the day. But Aaron Rodgers, oh my God. A-Rod was smoking out of the gates, wasn't he? No Sammy Watkins, no Christian Watson, no problem. He's zipping passes to Cobb, to Dobbs, to Lazard, to Tyler Davis. Tyler Davis had that big catch and run that basically set up the second touchdown. You know, the play calling is excellent, and the Packers are cashing in as their first two possessions yield two long drives, both of which reach pay dirt. Rodgers in those first two drives, 12 of 13 for 120 yards, two touchdowns, a ridiculous 9.2 yards per attempt. Maybe the light is coming on. And it sure seemed like the Packers were on their way to maybe not delivering the knockout blow, but certainly putting Tampa Bay on the ropes as the offense was charging down the field for the third straight drive before a crucial Aaron Jones fumble ended that. But before that, they look great on that third drive. There's Rodgers over the middle on an RPO to Cobb for 40. Cobb just kind of, as I like to say, Randall Cobbing his way down the field. Two A.J. Dillon runs. Net 13 yards, first and goal at the 9. Then there's a Jones run, a Dillon run. Third and goal at the 5. They run an excellent angle route call for Aaron Jones out of the backfield. He catches it. He was literally like 6 inches away from crossing the plane, if even that. And he just got popped in the back by that monster, Vita Vea. It just, oh, just nailed him. Ball comes out. Tampa Bay recovers in the end zone. Touchback. You know, it was brutal. It was a brutal fumble. But I know some probably think I'm defending him because I love him, but which I do, but there's not much Jonesy could do there. I mean, Vea, for Christ's sakes, Vea weighs like 350 pounds. So about 150 pounds more than Jonesy, give or take. A few cheeseburgers. A few Gilbert burgers, if you will. What are you going to do? You know what I mean? Most of us, you get hit in the back by a guy who's 150 pounds in the back from the side, or a guy who's 150 pounds bigger than you. You're not going to hang on to the ball. Come on. There's, you know, sometimes this thing, it was just a perfect storm of shit on that sequence. Not much you could do there, but what you can control is what comes after that. And the Packers did not control it well. The offense basically wilted. The play calling became very bland. Very repetitive. I mean, for an example, in that second half, did it not feel like every second down play was a pass to Tonyan? A little like 3 or 4 yard dump off to Tonyan and just hoping he could pick up some yak? Sure felt like it to me. They got away from the run for long stretches. Now, I know they weren't running the ball well, which they weren't, right? Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon each finished with 12 carries, Jonesy 36 yards, Dillon 32 yards, so 24 carries for 70 yards, so yeah, not even 3 yards per attempt. No, they weren't running the ball well, but I don't think you should totally give up on it for long stretches like they did. I didn't like that. And then Rodgers, who had a good day overall, finishing 27 of 35, 255 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, 7.3 yards per attempt. I felt like after he threw that pick, he didn't seem at all interested in pushing the ball downfield. I don't know if he got scared or I don't know what happened, but he felt like he went into a shell after that, you know, which the offense was already wilting. And then to have Rodgers to go into a shell, I mean, that hurt things even more, of course, as we saw. But Rodgers kind of not wanting to go downfield was so frustrating because when he did after that pick, like on his perfect fade pass to Alan Lazard down the sideline that picked up, what, 26? It worked. You know? I was like, Aaron, why are you going into a shell? See, it works. You can still go downfield. Weirdly kind of played scared, it felt like. I don't know any other way to say that. And overall, the offense was just brutal to watch. And that's not the first time that's happened in the Rodgers-LaFleur era. In fact, it's one of the most damning traits we've seen from the Packers in this era. The offense gets punched in the face one way or another, usually via a turnover, and they just wilt. We saw it in week one against the Vikings. They go into a shell. No answers on how to get out. And it's so frustrating because clearly Rodgers and LaFleur are excellent most of the time at game planning and identifying opponents' weaknesses, but they're still not great at adjusting. Now, yes, Tampa Bay head coach Todd Bowles is one of the best defensive minds on earth. And he adjusted very well Sunday. But still, this happens against not-so-great defensive minds, too. You know? And they're not great at responding once they take a shot. That has to change. It just does. You know? Like, I know it's the two of them running the offense. But at some point, you have to point the finger directly at the head coach. You just do. A team most reflects its head coach, at least the good ones do, in my opinion. And this consistent wilting when they get punched in the face, it's just starting to feel like it's very, you know, it's very just, that's LaFleur. I don't know. It's just not great. You know what I'm saying? It's got to change. It has to. All right, so that's my kind of portion of the show, most of it anyways. I told people to submit questions, Twitter, all the other channels, and people did not disappoint, so let's get to those now. These are in no particular order. First one comes from Justin Cornwell, at Justin A. Cornwell, longtime friend of the show, going back to the Podbean days. As always, appreciate that, Justin. He writes, "What a draining game. Play calling was upsetting after the Jones fumble, but the run defense was much improved, and the secondary played well despite losing Jair on the first series. But bottom line, you just have to enjoy every win you can get over Tom Brady." Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree with him. I mean, it was training. Like I said, he probably needed Pepto and or an oxygen tank to get through this one. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, the play calling was bad after that Jones fumble. You know, it's kind of reminiscent of the NFC Championship game they lost to Tampa at Lambeau. Just, again, that turned in the second half after that Jones fumble, after Jones fumble in that game. But you're right. Yeah, I talked about the run defense, thought they were excellent. And yeah, the secondary did overall play pretty well. Yeah, there were some hiccups, but overall I thought they played well. I don't think we could have ever expected Nixon to turn in the performance he did. So to get that from him was awesome, absolutely. Yeah, and fuck you, Tom Brady. Yeah, of course, absolutely. Got to enjoy it. Next one comes from Lucky at the Madisonian. He writes, "I'm exhausted. I've got nothing left in the tank. Get on the plane, guys, before they somehow review it and give it to the Bucks again. Hashtag go Pack go." Yeah, yeah. Every time there was a penalty on the Packers in the second half, I just, you know, there's this kind of this aura around Brady, you know, and I think a lot of people feel like the league very much wants him to win these games. Wants him to succeed for whatever reason. So yeah, every time there was a penalty called on the Packers in the second half, I was like, "Oh, here comes the league trying to keep Tom terrific in the game." Now, some of those were, I mean, most of those were legit calls. Some of them, like the penalty on Nalei, which I talked about, was horseshit. But, yeah, I mean, certainly the league, you know, Brady getting the ball with 3 minutes left, I mean, I'm sure there were some people in the league offices definitely thrilled about that. You couldn't have scripted that any better. So, yeah, I agree. Get the win and get the hell out of there. Amen. Our next one comes from Brad Artman, at Brad Artman. Brad, I don't think you've written in before, so cool. It's always cool to hear from new people. Brad writes, "Why on God's green earth does this offense fold when they get punched in the mouth? It's almost as though Matt LaFleur cannot let anything go and or has no idea how to adjust. Stick to the game plan. It's what almost had you up 21-3. He follows it up with, "Oh, and Sky Umah completely saved the day. Huge props to him with the big leap to just knock that pass off." Yeah. You know, Brad, like I said on Twitter, when you need a big moment, you call in a Minnesota man. So no surprise that my guy Devondre delivered there. I'm just kidding. But not really. Yeah, you know, you're kind of sensing the theme here with the offense, people being frustrated about the play calling. I don't know why they don't. I don't know why they fold. It just happens, though. You know? Sometimes it's not even necessarily a turnover that causes them to fold. Sometimes it's just kind of repeated pressure, Rodgers getting sacked a lot. Just like there's no kind of ability to weather storms and then come out the other end. You know what I mean? It's like it goes bad and it just stays bad. It's like, it's just, well, that's bad for the rest of the day. It's over. I don't know why this happens, because LaFleur is smart. Rodgers is smart. Like I said, they're excellent at game planning. Like you said in your comment, Brad, the game plan was excellent coming in. And as soon as Jones fumbled, it felt like they completely went away from that and they went scared. What impressed me most about the game plan was that they came out not scared. You know, I was like, wow, this is really fearless from this offense against a defense that's full of dudes, full of playmakers. The Packers came in completely unafraid. And then one big thing went against them. They became afraid. I don't know why that happens, but it's driving me nuts. I'm sure it's driving everybody else nuts. Yeah, definitely. So those are the Twitter questions. Thanks for those. We move on to the email. I do have a few of those. I only have 7% left. I better read these quick. All right. First one comes from Sean. He writes, "Lemps, it wasn't pretty, but a win is a win. Hopefully we get Watson and Alexander back soon. What did you think of old 69 today? I thought it was weird to alternate series, but it was good to see him play football again. Hopefully he comes out of it okay. Cheers, Sean." All right, Sean, have you written in before? See, it's like Brad sending the Twitter question. I always like hearing from new people, so good stuff, Sean. Don't be a stranger. What did I think of 69? I thought he looked good. He had the one nice play early that kind of spurred on a big Jones run, one of Jones' few big runs on the day. I thought he overall looked good. I was a little bit, I know, I'll be honest, I'm not crazy about having him and Yosh alternate series at left tackle. At some point, they're going to have to kick the training wheels off and have Bakhtiari go a full 60 minutes. So hopefully that happens soon. But I thought overall, he and Yosh combined to play well. I mean, Rodgers was only sacked once. Now, he was hit 6 times, but he was only sacked once. So anytime that happens, especially against a damn good defense like that, I mean, you got to think he played pretty well, at least at first blush. Yeah, overall, I was pleased. It's good to see Bakhtiari back out there. Yeah. All right, next one comes from... Hold on. Let's go to Rich, who writes in. His email's titled, Rich writes, first of all, an ugly win is better than an ugly loss. This was a game in June I counted as a loss, so it's all good. One thing I think we're going to look back on in 2022, on 2022, as a year, where Goody just had a monster draft. I know you have to wait 3 years, but so far it's looking really good. Yeah, that's an excellent point, Rich. 3 games in, it is looking good. I mean, I talk about Quay every week. If health stays on his side, I see no reason why the sky's the limit for this kid. I see no reason why he won't become a perennial Pro Bowl guy. Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable saying that only 3 games in. Watson, you know, I've talked a lot about my feelings on Watson. But Dobbs has been outstanding. Yeah, he was 8 for 8. 8 targets, 8 catches, 73 yards, 1 touchdown, and his first NFL touchdown. That was a nice touchdown, too. That was that play. They ran that play for Devontae about a million times. So knowing that they can run that for Dobbs now, that's good. That's good stuff. They can take that going forward. Thought he looked good. Who else? I'm trying to think of who else, but who else did they draft? Certainly those two. Zach Tom. Tom is a valuable bench piece right now, although I think it's only a matter of time before he's starting somewhere on the offensive line and kicking ass. So, yeah, those look like 3 pretty good gets right there. Absolutely. Sean Ryan in the 3rd round I think has been fairly disappointing. I had pretty high hopes for that pick. It's early, though. I will say this. If that pick doesn't hit, clearly there's some sort of weird-ass 3rd round curse going on with the Packers. Because... offensive line is his money spot. If he whiffs on an offensive lineman, that, again, his money spot in the 3rd round, then he should just trade every 3rd round pick the rest of his tenure for the rest of time, because clearly there's some sort of weird, funky curse going on there. But yeah, I agree. I mean, so far it looks like they've got 2 or 3 guys who could become pretty big pieces for the future out of this draft. And that's only 3 games in. So that's because one guy I've been a little bit disappointed by is Wyatt, the 1st round pick, the D tackle, the other 1st rounder from Georgia. I don't even know if he's seen the field. Feels like he's been active, but he just hasn't been getting, I haven't heard his name called or anything. You don't see him on the stat sheet. I don't think he's played more than a handful of snaps so far. So hopefully that changes, because he's already 24, so we kind of got to get the ball rolling early on that with him. But yeah, I agree with you. Good stuff, Rich. We now come to the Kyle portion of the show. Oh, yeah. Let's start with Kyle, who refuses to get Twitter, Kyle Trepenning. He writes, the Packers pulled that one out of the asses. The defense was incredible, at least until the very end. Why the hell do we keep doing that, playing so soft at the end when only barely leading a team? It's infuriating. Speaking of things that infuriate, how about the offense? Again, are you sensing the trend? It looked like we were about to dominate them, and then we got punched in the face. Then we completely fold and forget how to play offense. How could we possibly be so soft? But the defense doesn't. Most of that game was insane. They were so dominant. Shutting down Brady, how many tablets did he break this time? And the special teams may have turned the corner at last. Tough watching a game with a migraine, especially since the Packers insisted on raising my blood pressure to unimaginable levels. Hopefully the other Kyle had a more enjoyable watching experience. Go, Pack, go. See, the Kyles communicate with each other through the emails. I fucking love that. I do. I love it. That's great. My goal someday is to have like a Kyle, a meeting of the Kyles, and then like I'll do the show and they'd be like my guests. And we would all like figure out how to go to a game at the same time and do a pod after. That'd be cool, right? That would be like a mega show, you could almost even say. So a lot to get to here. We'll start with, great question. I don't know why they played so soft at the end. Because like I said, you knew Brady was, like, I knew what Brady was going to do. How do I know what Brady's going to do more than Joe Barry knows? I knew Brady was going to come out dinking and dunking and picking his spots, and he wasn't going to force anything, take what the defense gives, and just kind of matriculate the ball down the damn field. Joe Barry still had his guys playing 9, 10, 11 yards off the line of scrimmage. Get up and challenge these guys. Make Brady go downfield and make a play. Or at least try to, you know, jam the receivers and give your front seven a better shot to get pressure on Brady. Anything. Because you were never going to get pressure on him that way. Because with the cushion they were giving the wideouts, all Brady has to do is that Brady thing, you know, shotgun catch, 1-2 throw. You're not going to get to him then. Idiotic. Yeah, and I've talked a lot about the offense. Yeah, punch in the face, folded, I agree. No question there. I don't know if Brady broke any tablets. I think he's trying to be a kinder, gentler Brady. Because he's trying to get his wife back or something. I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, the special teams. Again, the special teams, we should be excited about the special teams. Because I think they're becoming good. Hopefully your migraine's getting better, Kyle, too. Get well. All right, last email comes from the other Kyle. Kyle used to have Twitter, got rid of it, got it again, and then got rid of it again. He writes, "Dub's a dub, but it sure feels like this team loses by 2 scores if Tampa Bay isn't in such injury hell. You can only play your schedule, I guess, but it really feels like this team is supremely and spectacularly effed if they have to play at Raymond James in January. Romeo Dobbs season." Then he writes, "And one more thing, Romeo Dobbs, 873-1, caught all his targets. Other Packers wide receivers, 7-102-1. 7 catches, 102 yards, 1 score. Lazard and Cobb. Devontae Adams, 5 catches, 36 yards, 1 score. Not that I'm petty with Adams. You do you, DA. Just petty as hell with the way this was covered after week 1. Yeah, I said as much on Twitter after the early games, after Vegas lost to Tennessee to fall to 0-3, that Adams in the last 2 weeks, he had that monster first week against L.A. Last 2 weeks, was it 7 catches for 48 yards and 2 scores on, I think, 17 targets? So, yeah, not great after that first week. And you're right, we're not shitting on Adams. And I wanted to stress that, and I'm glad you did too. Nobody's shitting on Adams. We're shitting on this narrative that existed that was created by other fans and media people that like, oh, see, the Packers do need Adams. That was a terrible decision. So I'm glad you clarified that. But back to your original point. I don't know if I would agree with you that they lose by 2 scores because the Packers were injured too. Right? No Sammy Watkins, no Christian Watson, Ja leaves the game early. So I don't know. If both teams were at full strength, I'm not sure they lose. I don't know if they win, but I don't know if they lose by 2 scores. I don't know if I'd agree with you there. I don't know if they'd be effed if they have to go down there in January. It would be tough, for sure. But Packer fans travel so well, that would basically be almost like a home game for Green Bay, too. So you wouldn't have that element. I don't know if they'd be effed. I don't know if I agree with you on that. But I see what you're saying, for sure. All right, so thank you to the Kyles. We come to one more. It's from my former Old Bag of Donuts podcast co-host, Gene Bosling. Gene, I give you the hammer every week. You know it. I gotta take a deep breath before this one. The 1 year the Packers won the Super Bowl with Rodgers was the 1 year, I'd argue, where they had a defense that could bail him out. Think about that run at the end of the year. Collins pick against the Bears, Tremont Williams pick against the Eagles, the Williams pick 6 at halftime of the Falcons game, Raji Shields in the NFC title game, Nick Collins pick 6, Clay Matthews fumble recovery in the Super Bowl. When has that happened since then? I suppose you could argue it happened in the NFC playoffs last year, and they lost the game because the special teams and Rodgers didn't hold up their end of the bargain. But looking at what they did against Fournette and how they kept Brady from making big plays, isn't there just something about this that feels sturdier than the years where it's, okay, Aaron, go score 45 points every week? They'll need the offense to be better too, But this at least feels like it provides some margin for error while that's happening. That is all. Please resume your Devondre Campbell love fest. Oh, well, by all means. I should have got a Devondre jersey. I got that Jaw jersey. I got the throwback jersey last year. And I got to wear it for, what, like a month? And then he hurt his shoulder and he was out most of the year. And I got to wear it for 2 weeks. And now he's out of the ground. I hope he's not out for a long time. Because I've worn that goddamn Jaw jersey on game day more than he has the last 2 years. I probably should have. I love Jaw. But maybe I should have got a Campbell jersey, I'm starting to think, maybe. If I had known he was going to do what he's done, I would have. I'll say that. But back to your question. Yeah, I do think it does. It feels sturdier. Yeah. Because this was the best the defense has played all year, you know. It's getting better every week, which is a big positive. And you're right, it's definitely more, it travels better than the old Aaron Go Be Godzilla every week, which we saw how that worked out in the playoffs most years. It's just hard to do that every week, no matter how good you are. But yeah, you're right, they'll need the offense to be better. It provides some margin for, you're right. And you know, it's funny. I said on the season preview, early in the season at least, the defense was going to have to carry the day while the offense found its footing. I was thinking about this sometime after the game tonight, that it's funny, we go, you know, we're kind of pissed off about the result, like, oh, the offense should have played better. But really, that's mostly due to the hot start, right? Like, this was the, what I'm trying to say is, this was the type of game I expected from the Packers early in the year, and I said as much on the season preview. Defense carries the day while the offense is figuring it out. That's exactly what happened today. It's just that hot start from the offense changed our expectations of shit. And it was like, oh, they should blow these guys out now because they're coming out of the gate so hot here today. But this really isn't that far off from what I thought we'd see 3 weeks in. So you're right, though. I do think this approach is being a more defensive team is sturdier. It's more reliable. Like I've said, it travels better. Yeah, so I agree with you. This definitely has the chance to be the best defense he's had since 2010, no question. Again, we all know what happened that year. So yeah, definitely agree with you, buddy. Thank you for the questions. Thank you for the question. Thank you to everybody who wrote in questions, as always. Incredibly appreciated. Okay, oh my God, big picture time now. 47 minutes in. Oh my gosh, this is a Bruce Springsteen podcast tonight. The Packers showed us a lot Sunday in Tampa, both positive and negative. The defense turned in its best showing of the year thus far, keeping one of the best ever play in check for most of the day and coming up with turnovers when they were desperately needed. In producing a big play at the biggest moment, they showed us they can indeed close perhaps the key ability of any championship defense. The special teams are showing major improvements already, and if this continues, who knows, maybe that unit can become not just a just don't screw things up for us group, but perhaps even a strength of the team. And the offense showed early on it indeed has the potential, the makings, to become the lethal unit we're accustomed to seeing, even with all these still unanswered questions at receiver. But there were also some troubling signs. Signs that this Packers team has yet to overcome the mental hurdles that have largely been responsible for all the disappointing season-ending losses that have marked the Matt LaFleur era thus far. An offense that goes into a shell and plays not to lose once the opponent delivers a sharp blow. A defensive coaching staff that plays far too soft at a crucial moment and is forced to attempt a Houdini-esque escape in the final moments. It should not have come to that Sunday, and yet it did. And as fun or relieving as the win was, these escapes cannot always be counted on. This Packers team entered the season at a crossroads. Would they continue to be merely a great regular season team that wilts in the playoffs? Or would they take that next step and become champions? The victory over Brady and the Bucks was, again, definitely satisfying on a few different levels. But as far as answering that ultimate question of who the real 2022 Green Bay Packers are, it likely left you still searching. Okay, so that just about wraps up this episode of Lemps Talking Pack. I hope you all had as much fun listening as I did recording it. It's always a blast, you know, especially after you beat Tom Brady. Again, Some things to be desired still, but beating Brady is great. It's fun. We look ahead to next week now. The Packers will be back in action, back at Lambeau, hosting Brady's former team, the New England Patriots. That one is set for a 3:25 p.m. Lambeau time kickoff on CBS. If I were a betting man, I would guess we're going to get Jim Nance and Tony Romo on the call for that, I would think. Romo, it's always fun when Romo does Packers games. I like Romo. I know he annoys some people, but I like Romo. But it's especially fun when he does Packers games because obviously he's from Wisconsin. He's from Burlington. So he can't, he tries really hard to be a pro and to hide all that, the fact that he grew up a huge Packer fan, but he kind of can't do it. The Wisconsin, the Scotty in him just comes through. And it's a lot of fun to watch. So looking forward to that. Hopefully it is him and Jim Nance. The Patriots are 1-2 on the season. They lost to Baltimore Sunday. Looks like they're going to be without starting quarterback Mac Jones. He injured his ankle in that one. So it may be the Brian Hoyer show next week at Lambeau. Let me tell you something. I want to be clear on this. I don't give a shit if it's Brian Hoyer at quarterback. I don't give a shit if it's my brother-in-law, Brian, at quarterback. It's still Bill Belichick on the other sideline. So the Packers better be ready because he is one of the best game-planning minds in league history. And he will have something cooked up for Aaron Rodgers. They've struggled this year, but he will have something cooked up. You can bet your ass on that. It is Bill Belichick. The Packers better not overlook this one. They better not be looking to the trip to London. They better be ready for this pass game, or else they will fall into a trap. Absolutely. And of course, I'll be back to recap that one next Sunday night, win, lose, or draw, fresh off my weekend in Ripon. I have a wedding to go to in Ripon next weekend. First time I'm ever going to be going to Ripon. So that should be interesting. Of course, it'll be Monday morning before you hear the show. So keep your eyes and your ears open for that. And yes, I'll keep you posted. So until next time, whenever that may be, I am Chris Lempesis. This has been Lemp's Talkin' Pack. Thank you so very much for listening, Packer Nation. I love you. I love you. I love you. Please stay safe out there in this crazy world. Again, up yours, Tom Brady. And remember, always and forever, go Pack. Go.